how they have been whitewashing war crimes of Israel against Palestinians.
Israel is losing out. They're losing the media war despite their connections. They are losing the media war. The tide is turning.
What are their connections?
Deep pockets.
What does that mean?
Well, they're very influential people. I mean, they control media.
I would call that an anti-Semitic remark.
Pakistan has rejected criticism of pro-Israeli lobbies and Western media, claiming that country's foreign minister's remarks were anti-Semitic. On the contrary, foreign minister's analogy about nexus between Israel and Western media has been welcomed across the Muslim world. Islamabad says the Western media has been covering up the massacre of Palestinians by propagating it as Israel's right of self-defense. On the other hand, whenever leaders of the Muslim countries speak truth about Israel's aggression and apartheid state's overgrown influence on Western media to whitewash its war crimes, they call it anti-Semitic. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Bishop Talbot Swan, a highly respected civil rights activist, expressed a sympathy and solidarity among the African American community for the Palestinians as outrage over Israel's actions has continued to grow.
If any people should resonate with what's going on in Palestine, it's black people in America. Even when we look at what's happening on the streets in our nation, many police departments across America actually go to Israel to be trained by the military in so-called counterterrorism strategies. And then they come here into black communities and employ those strategies on black citizens. So we fully understand their struggle. It resonates with us, and we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
For many, the fact the U.S. government funds Israel while reparations owed to black Americans have yet to be paid is hypocritical.
They can find nearly $4 billion a year to give to Israel, but they can't find any money to give to African Americans who descended from enslaved Africans. It's a travesty. It's a shame. And we're not asking for a handout. We're not asking for you to do us a favor. That's money that is owed. That's a debt that the United States has yet to pay.
Like many faith leaders, Bishop Swan reiterated his continued support for the Palestinians in the face of racist apartheid.
Oppressed people all over the world are watching what's happening. We are standing in solidarity with you. We are pushing and pressing for governmental structures to condemn the violence, to stop the funding of terrorism, because that's exactly what it is, and we want them to remain steadfast, to be strong, and to know that we are behind them.
The demands for the U.S. to stop funding Palestinian oppression and to implement justice for black America will continue as long as the status quo remains in place.
Support for the Palestinians has undoubtedly intensified, with millions of people around the world condemning Israel, demanding an end to the occupation of Palestine. Richard Sudam, London.
With less than a month to go until the presidential election in Iran, people are discussing about the policies the next president must follow to solve the problems. Out of over 400 contenders, about 40 heavyweight ones claim their number one goal is to solve economic problems that have been growing during the past years. In order to see how these plans are feasible, we talked to some lawmakers regarding the objectives every hopeful must have in mind.
In every election, the economy is of great significance to people, especially at a time they've experienced tough times in the face of economic issues. Hopefuls make promises, but people must be watchful not to pin hope on their slogans. Their slogans must have a logical basis. In my opinion, what the country needs in terms of economy is a look at international capabilities. Of course, the sanctions are biting, but we can't say all our economic problems are because of the sanctions. Most of our economic issues are the result of not paying attention to domestic capabilities.
Another lawmaker told us the most important things a president must follow are transparency and accountability.
People expect the runners to be honest with them. They say the next president must have a comprehensive plan for the economic issues. It means the result of their plans must be seen in the economic basket of the families. Within the past 8 years, the government was waiting for decisions to be made outside the country. The next president should fight against corruption and injustice.
The MPs stressed that having good relations with the world for economic improvement is a must, but each country should rely on its own capabilities.
The livelihood of people and solving economic problems is the main slogan of most of the hopefuls for the 13th presidential election of Iran. They also say that they have detailed plans to improve the life quality of people. Human Abedi, Tehran.
Immortal lessons of a crucial battle. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, friends. And today we would be presenting to you an exclusive feature on a special occasion, the lessons of which have remained immortal for all seekers of truth for the past millennium and four centuries. Stay with us, please. When you were fleeing without paying any attention to anyone, while the Prophet was calling you from your ear, he requited you with grief upon grief. So, you may not grieve for what you lose, nor for what befalls you, and Allah is well aware of what you do. Then he sent down to you safety after grief, a drowsiness that came over a group of you, while another group, anxious only about themselves, entertained false notions about Allah, notions of pagan ignorance. They say, "Do we have any role in the matter?" Say, "Indeed, the matter belongs totally to Allah." They hide in their hearts what they do not disclose to you. They say, "Had we any role in the matter, we would not have been slain here." Say, "Even if you had remained in your houses, those destined to be slain would have set out toward the places where they were laid to rest, so that Allah may test what is in your breasts, and that He may purge what is in your hearts, and Allah knows best what is in the breast." Those of you who fled on the day when the two hosts met, only Satan had made them stumble because of some of their deeds. Certainly, Allah has excused them, for Allah is all-forgiving, all-forbearing. Dear listeners, what you heard were the ayahs 153, 154, and 155 of Surah Al-Imran of the Noble Qur'an, in which the All-Wise Creator has immortalized certain events so that mankind may heed the lessons of history in order to differentiate between truth and falsehood. Today, the 15th of Shawwal, is the anniversary of one such event that occurred in the year 3 AH, when the pagan Arabs of Mecca descended upon Medina with a massive force of well-equipped infidels intent on avenging the disastrous defeat they had suffered a year before at Badr at the hands of a mere 313 ill-equipped Muslims when they imposed the first ever armed encounter upon Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The new Muslims in Medina, among whom there was a sizable number of those who pay only lip service to Islam but were devoid of faith in their hearts, were terrified at the prospects of risking their life in fighting such a force. Some proposed they should stay in Medina and allow the Meccan polytheists to enter the city so that they can fight them in the streets from the safety of their homes without much risk to life. Others frowned upon such an idea by pointing out the risk to the honor of their womenfolk and the danger to their children if the invaders managed to get the upper hand. It was thus decided to meet the invading force outside the city near Mount Uhud. But no sooner than the Prophet marched forth, a large group of several hundred hypocrites left him and returned to the city. Undaunted, the Prophet of Peace arranged his forces in battle ranks and gave clear-cut instructions to the guards he had posted on the mountain against leaving their positions. The pagan Arabs charged, but the Muslims held their ground. And thanks to the valor and swordsmanship of the Prophet's uncle Hamza, as well as the Prophet's dear cousin, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon them, the pagan Arabs retreated, leaving behind their camp baggage. On seeing this sight, a group of weak-willed Muslims went for the spoils, and the guards at the mountain pass joined in the loot in disobedience to the Prophet's instructions against leaving the place unguarded. This was the very opportunity for which a force of pagan Arabs led by Khalid ibn Walid was lying in wait, and it immediately burst upon the Muslims, making most of them flee the battlefield. The excuse which the fleeing neo-Muslims later proffered was that the Prophet had been martyred and it was now pointless for them to endanger their life for the sake of Islam. This is firm indication of the lack of faith in Islam of the majority of Sahaba or Prophet's companions, especially in view of the refusal to heed the voice of the Prophet, who was alive and was exhorting them to stay their ground. God Almighty refers to this fact in Ayah 144 of Surah Al-Imran, in the Noble Quran. Muhammad is but a prophet. Other prophets have passed before him. If he dies or is slain, will you turn back on your heels? Anyone who turns back on his heels will not harm Allah in the least, and soon Allah will reward the grateful. Among the grateful that Allah rewarded on the day of Uhud was the martyr Hamza, peace upon him. He was struck from behind a tree by the coward Wahshi, who ripped apart the liver of his victim and presented it for chewing in the cannibalistic manner of present-day Salafi Takfiri terrorists to his mistress Hind, the wife of the Umayyad pagan chief Abu Sufyan. The near disaster for the Muslims was averted by the steadfastness of Imam Ali, peace upon him, who shielded his cousin, the Prophet, without the least weakness and with full dignity and honor. As the Noble Quran says in Ayah 146 of Surah Al-Imran, how many a prophet there has been with whom a multitude of godly men fought. They did not falter for what befell them in the way of Allah, neither did they weaken nor did they abase them, and Allah loves the steadfast. By pondering on the ayahs of the Noble Quran, we realize that the Lord Most High has praised the one and only commander of the faithful for his valor. Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, was a person who had saved Islam and the life of the seal of messengers at the Battle of Uhud, as Archangel Gabriel was heard singing his phrase, La fata illa Ali la saif illa Zulfaqar. There is no brave youth except Ali and no flashing sword except Zulfaqar, the twin-bladed.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked and
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned. Dear brothers and sisters, every person's character is hidden behind his tongue and words. Many of our problems in life have root in our word and how we use our tongue. On the other hand, one can develop and grow through his words. This means that we can convey many good points through our tongue or words. Now, in today's world, many societies are afflicted with the sins that are related to tongue and words.
البته وقتی میگم زبان امروز زبان مجازی را منظورم هست.
Of course, by tongue and words, I only do not mean the speaking, but also the sentences and audios and videos that are produced through social media and social networks, whether it is written or spoken. In other words, whenever you're sending a message or voice or video on a social network, you're using your tongue, and you have to be careful about what you write or say. This is because your words on social media can also be afflicted with the slander, backbite, jealousy, and suspicion. And these sins have negative effects on your life and the lives of others. Therefore, the sins of tongue are not just limited to your speaking. It can be your writing in the newspaper, website, social media, and other platforms too. As a result, we have to be very careful about our sayings and writings, because they may lead us to hellfire in this world and the other world. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bye. Iran held its first presidential election in less than a year after the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution on the 25th of January 1980. Abul Hassan Bani Sadr was elected as the country's first ever president after securing over 75% of the votes. Iran's first presidential election was held with the participation of more than 14 million people. The presidency of Bani Sadr ended after he was impeached by parliament in June 1981. With a landslide victory, former Prime Minister Mohammad Ali Rajai replaced Bani Sadr. However, Rajai's presidency did not last long. He was assassinated, along with Prime Minister Mohammad Javad Bahonar, in a bomb blast on the 30th of August 1981. Rajai's assassination resulted in another early election. This time, Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, then a member of parliament, became the third president of the country with more than 95% of the votes. Ayatollah Khamenei was re-elected in 1985 with another overwhelming victory. His presidency coincided with the war Iraq imposed on Iran. During his last weeks in office, the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, passed away. Ayatollah Khamenei was then chosen as the country's leader by the Assembly of Experts on the 4th of June 1989. In Iran's fifth presidential election, influential politician and parliament speaker Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani was elected with more than 15 million votes. In 1993, Rafsanjani was re-elected with a wide margin. However, the general turnout that year was relatively low. Rafsanjani's eight-year presidency is known as the construction period, mainly due to his administration's economic reforms. The voter turnout reached a record high in Iran's seventh presidential election, when nearly 80% of the voting eligible population cast their ballots. Reformist candidate Mohammad Khatami became Iran's president with nearly 70% of the votes. Khatami was re-elected in 2001 for a second term, following another high voter turnout. Iran's ninth presidential election was the first in history to go into a runoff, after none of the seven candidates secured the 50% needed majority in the country's closest ever presidential race. Former President Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani and Tehran Mayor Mahmoud Ahmadinejad went into the second round. The runoff led to Ahmadinejad's victory. In 2009, incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was re-elected with 24 million votes. This year recorded the highest percentage of voter turnout in the country's history of presidential elections. However, the final result of the election drew objections over what some claimed was election fraud. The allegations were, however, rejected by the country's supervisory bodies, and Ahmadinejad stayed in office as president. Hassan Rouhani became Iran's next president. He served for two terms after victories in the 2013 and the 2017 presidential races. With 50% and 57% majority votes, the reformist-backed president won the country's top executive post in two consecutive elections that witnessed passionate public participation. Who will be the winner of Iran's 13th presidential election? That is a decision Iranians will make on the 18th of June.
The recent Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip began on May 10th, after the Israeli regime attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque and started eviction plans of the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in the occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire. However, this time Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. Finally, after 11 days of brutal Israeli attacks that killed at least 279 Palestinians, including 69 children, the occupying regime announced a unilateral ceasefire on Friday, which was accepted by Palestinian resistance groups with Egyptian mediation. People in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank hailed the truce as a victory for Palestinian resistance groups in the face of Israel's attacks. The 11-day-long Israeli aggression resulted in the displacement of over 90,000 Gazans and the destruction of Gaza's critical infrastructure and many civilian buildings. International NGOs and Gaza officials say several hospitals and schools, as well as power and sewage plants, have been severely damaged. The Red Cross says that Gaza could take years to rebuild. Moreover, Palestinian lawyers say the Israeli army's use of live fire and rubber-coated bullets from short range against Palestinian demonstrators is a war crime. Meanwhile, Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki has sent a letter to the International Criminal Court's prosecutor's office, including documents on new and ongoing crimes, calling for an investigation into Israel's war crimes in Gaza, West Bank, and Jerusalem al-Quds.
I think that now, following the horrific damage that Israel did, wherein it targeted homes, medical centers, press buildings, these are all in blatant violation of international law. And much as Israel liked to say that Hamas had some presence there, there is no evidence to support that. So I think this time, with an investigation about to begin regarding possible war crimes that Israel committed in 2014, I do believe that these will be added to it.
Following a ceasefire between Tel Aviv and Palestinian resistance groups, after 11 days of Israel's deadly war on the Gaza Strip, Hamas and the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, Al-Quds Brigades, thanked Iran for its unwavering support for the Palestinian resistance, saying Iran is a partner in the victory against Israel. Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, congratulated Palestinians for their victory against Israel. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that Palestinians' resistance left the Zionist regime with no choice but to request a ceasefire.
The regime's defeat was manifested both in its continued crimes and its request for a ceasefire. The Israeli regime was forced to concede defeat.
The Iranian leader noted that the Israeli regime will get weaker than what it is today, while the preparedness of resistance forces will make Palestine stronger day by day. He also called on the entire Muslim nations to feel responsible for the Palestinian cause.
Muslim governments should enter the scene with sincerity to support the Palestinian nation, whether by boosting their military might or lending financial support. This is required more than ever before for the reconstruction of the infrastructure and repairing the damage done to Gaza.
Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized that the crimes Israel committed during its latest onslaught should not be left unpunished. He said Israeli authorities, particularly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, must be brought to justice in independent international tribunals.
The defeat will indirectly do that, because Israel has seen, the Israeli government has seen, that it no longer has the level of support around the world that it once believed it had. People spoke up in the streets. There were mass demonstrations in support of Palestine around the world. Many governments, although they were critical of Hamas, unjustly critical, they were also critical of Israel. This is new. Israel no longer can do whatever it wants with complete impunity.
Israel launched an offensive on the Gaza Strip and approved a ceasefire without any preconditions or strategic breakthrough. This means the Palestinian resistance has taught Israelis an important lesson, and that is the Israeli enemy is incapable of facing Palestine's united uprising. The recent Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip began on May 10th, after the Israeli regime attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque and started eviction plans of the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in the occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire. However, this time Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. Finally, after 11 days of brutal Israeli attacks that killed at least 279 Palestinians, including 69 children, the occupying regime announced a unilateral ceasefire on Friday, which was accepted by Palestinian resistance groups with Egyptian mediation. People in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank hailed the truce as a victory for Palestinian resistance groups in the face of Israel's attacks. The 11-day-long Israeli aggression resulted in the displacement of over 90,000 Gazans and the destruction of Gaza's critical infrastructure and many civilian buildings. International NGOs and Gaza officials say several hospitals and schools, as well as power and sewage plants, have been severely damaged. The Red Cross says that Gaza could take years to rebuild. Moreover, Palestinian lawyers say the Israeli army's use of live fire and rubber-coated bullets from short range against Palestinian demonstrators is a war crime. Meanwhile, Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki has sent a letter to the International Criminal Court's prosecutor's office, including documents on new and ongoing crimes, calling for an investigation into Israel's war crimes in Gaza, West Bank, and Jerusalem al-Quds.
I think that now, following the horrific damage that Israel did, wherein it targeted homes, medical centers, press buildings, these are all in blatant violation of international law. And much as Israel would like to say that Hamas had some presence there, there is no evidence to support that. So I think this time, with an investigation about to begin regarding possible war crimes that Israel committed in 2014, I do believe that these will be added to it.
Following a ceasefire between Tel Aviv and Palestinian resistance groups, after 11 days of Israel's deadly war on the Gaza Strip, Hamas and the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, Al-Quds Brigades, thanked Iran for its unwavering support for the Palestinian resistance, saying Iran is a partner in the victory against Israel. Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, congratulated Palestinians for their victory against Israel. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that Palestinians' resistance left the Zionist regime with no choice but to request a ceasefire.
The regime's defeat was manifested both in its continued crimes and its request for a ceasefire. The Israeli regime was forced to concede defeat.
The Iranian leader noted that the Israeli regime will get weaker than what it is today, while the preparedness of resistance forces will make Palestine stronger day by day. He also called on the entire Muslim nations to feel responsible for the Palestinian cause.
Muslim governments should enter the scene with sincerity to support the Palestinian nation, whether by boosting their military might or lending financial support. This is required more than ever before for the reconstruction of the infrastructure and repairing the damage done to Gaza.
Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized that the crimes Israel committed during its latest onslaught should not be left unpunished. He said Israeli authorities, particularly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, must be brought to justice in independent international tribunals.
The defeat will indirectly do that, because Israel has seen, the Israeli government has seen, that it no longer has the level of support around the world that it once believed it had. People spoke up in the streets. There were mass demonstrations in support of Palestine around the world. Many governments, although they were critical of Hamas, unjustly critical, they were also critical of Israel. This is new. Israel no longer can do whatever it wants with complete impunity.
Israel launched an offensive on the Gaza Strip and approved a ceasefire without any preconditions or strategic breakthrough. This means the Palestinian resistance has taught Israelis an important lesson, and that is the Israeli enemy is incapable of facing Palestine's united uprising.
Yeah.
Palestinians have poured to the streets to celebrate their victory over Israel in the 11-day fighting between the two sides. Rallies were held across the besieged Gaza Strip in condemnation of the Israeli regime and celebration of its defeat. Gatherings were also held in the occupied West Bank, where joyful participants cheered for the victory for the resistance. The celebrations came after an Egypt-brokered ceasefire went into effect on Friday morning, ending the fiercest battle there in years. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire, but this time, Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. Experts believe that Israel has succumbed to the unprecedented response by the Palestinian resistance and agreed to the ceasefire without any preconditions.
I think it's a huge win. The fact is that never before have we seen Israel penetrated militarily, psychologically, and morally in this way before. The sheer numbers of Palestinian resistance missiles that actually penetrated the Iron Dome is absolutely incredible. This much vaunted dome, which was meant to protect the Israeli civilians, essentially collapsed, because my estimation is around 30% of the missiles got through. And what were these missiles? Essentially, they were just homemade rockets. Not only that, what we've seen is that this, for the first time, turned into an insurrection within occupied Palestinian territory. Within the colony itself, they call Israel, you saw huge numbers of Palestinians demonstrating and rising up, and actually huge clashes took place. A lot of that would have been suppressed.
People across the world have shown their solidarity with Palestinians in the past few days. In the United States, protesters called for the cessation of all funding to Israel. As the Israeli regime was targeting the people of Palestine, the U.S. administration approved the sale of $735 million in precision-guided weapons to the Israeli regime. The arms deal is now pending the approval of Congress. Several American congresspeople, including Senator Bernie Sanders and House Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Mark Pocan, and Rashida Tlaib, objected to the plan and introduced motions to block the sales. But given the traditionally strong support for Israel in the Congress, the motions will almost certainly fail.
The U.S. is totally $3.5 billion per annum is donated by Israel to by America to Israel in order to sustain its arms industry. As the bombs were falling on Palestinian children, you found that Joe Biden cleared $750 million of aid for arms and missiles to Israel. So that was the initial response of America.
In the meantime, U.S. President Joe Biden has welcomed the ceasefire, expressing hope that it would hold. He, however, reaffirmed the U.S. support for the Israeli regime. Several Israeli political and military figures have questioned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's motives for launching the offensive on the Gaza Strip and approving a ceasefire without any strategic breakthrough for the regime. Netanyahu's political opponents speculate that the premier ordered the strikes after he failed to establish a coalition cabinet to put an end to Israel's political stalemate. But the developments over the past 2 weeks have shown that the next time the regime ventures an offensive against Gaza, it could face consequences more serious than a political vacuum in Tel Aviv.
The light.
For many professional climbers, ascending Mount Everest for even once remains an almost distant dream. However, a Napoli man has achieved that feat not once or twice, but 25 times. Kamirita Sherpa has arrived back in the capital, Kathmandu, after breaking his own whopping record of 24 ascents to the summit of the world's tallest mountain. The veteran climber hopes that his accomplishment represents a big achievement for his small country. Climbing tall mountains runs in Kami's blood. He belongs to the Sherpa tribe, one of the Tibetan ethnic groups and native to the most mountainous region of Nepal. Now, a heart-touching video has gone viral showing an adorable baby giraffe discover her shadow for the very first time. The animal is seen curiously looking at the ground as her shadow reflects her moves. The calf, which has not been named yet, was born in a safari park in South Australia earlier this month. It is being bottle-fed and hand-raised by the zoo staff for now, but the keepers hope she can join her herd once she becomes stronger. Now, the iconic Eiffel Tower in Paris has been illuminated for the first time using electricity produced from certified renewable hydrogen. In an amazing show, hydrogen-generated lights were projected onto the tower's frames, displaying various patterns and designs, making viewers ecstatic. It's a dream project of a French company based in the city of Saint-Malo. The company wanted to make the most recognizable landmark a showcase for its carbon-free technology. The objective is to bring more awareness of renewable energy to the public. The nightly event will continue until May the 30th. Countries around the world are investing a lot to develop hydrogen-related technologies. A French musician helps patients in an end-of-life care home to escape from pain by playing the cello for them. Let's have a listen.
Music soothes pain as music eases their symptoms. In palliative care, in end-of-life care, there is sometimes still pain in spite of the morphine, in spite of the drugs that really help manage the pain of the patients. They still feel pain, and music really has a calming power on the residual pain of palliative care patients.
The sound of Claire Oppert's solo cello resonates through the rooms of Jean Garnier End-of-Life Care Home in southern Paris on Fridays. She plays for patients who suffer from physical pain as well as terminal illnesses. The center's staff say music lightens patients' moods and puts them in a calm state.
After Claire leaves the room, we find the patients in a calm state, at times moved, at times happy. A lot happens. There are moments of tears, moments of joy. When we go into the room, we find there is an encounter with the person and his or her story.
I'm in permanent pain. The music helps a little to escape from the pain, I think. You pay attention to the music, and if it's a piece you know, you anticipate the next note. There you go. It's like that.
Claire has been playing the cello for patients in end-of-life care for almost a decade. She says the fact that music makes people feel good has been known since the beginning of humanity, but today it needs to be proven scientifically. Therefore, she has made it her mission to demonstrate the therapeutic effects of music on patients by taking medical studies.
A Russian zoo is delighted to welcome a new resident, a rare snow white wallaby. The cute Joey named Elisa was born at Regina Zoo in the southwestern city of Kazan. Zookeepers say she is healthy, playful, and has won the visitors' attention. Interestingly enough, Elisa's brother Alec was born with normal pigmentation. Wallabies are members of the kangaroo family. The albino wallaby, which has no skin pigmentation and pink eyes, is believed to be extremely rare. Circus and lab animals are getting a second shot at life after a Frenchman built a sanctuary using his own private funds. The sanctuary houses some large animals like rescued lions, elephants and hippos, but it's also home to some lab creatures that were kept for scientific studies, such as the macaques. Circus and lab animals are usually euthanized if they are not rescued. Owner and sanctuary investor Patrick Viola says every day he takes numerous phone calls from circus owners asking about free space at his shelter.
More than a zoo, this is a shelter. It is a refuge above all for animals that need it when there is no other solution. You know, we get 5 to 6 calls every day. Fortunately, in 90% of cases, our help is not even needed. You can't just call us and say, hey, I have a horse, I don't want it anymore. There are plenty of other options. We put a lot of people in touch with each other. People who look for animals and people who have animals they need taken care of. We accommodate animals when there is really no other solution.
Patrick says his shelter is one of 3 sanctuaries that are able to look after wild animals and the only one with the space capacity. He said he's planning an extension as a bill aimed at phasing out the use of wild animals in circuses passes through Parliament. Based on government figures, there are some 80 traveling circuses in France. The ban will be phased in over 5 years once the legislation comes into effect.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
First a hobby and now a money-making career. A Chinese artist creates objects out of wolf felt in a studio in Beijing.
I came across pictures about wolf felt art online by chance. I was very interested in this kind of material, so I did some research and started to try to make something. I've been doing it for about more than 10 years now. I didn't expect that I could do it for such a long time. At first, it was just a little hobby. I wouldn't have thought that I would do it as a profession.
Yin's current exhibition is themed on a warm sense of family unit depicted by cute and cozy mushroom-headed figures. One features a small mushroom-headed family, another features a life-sized adult and child with the same shape. Other artworks include plants and animals, but whatever the creations are, they are infused with human emotions, making people feel good. That's what the 31-year-old Chinese artist says. So far, she has been part of 9 exhibitions in China and Japan.
Let's go to Russia to take a look at St. Petersburg's largest celebration in spring, the Tulip Festival. Around 200,000 tulips from 100 varieties are on display in the colorful gala. It includes 15 extremely rare flower species. Russian artists also participated in the event to promote their traditional culture through various performances. The annual festival, held in Kirov Central Park, attracts hundreds of visitors. This year's event will run until late May.
A French artist has placed the Eiffel Tower on a cliff using optical illusion on the famous landmark. In his work, street artist JR has removed the River Seine or Seine with an imaginary street that would go from the Trocadero to the Eiffel Tower. This work is a collage of several layers of paper, which are not to last long due to the rain and the crowd that will walk on it. According to the artist's post on Instagram, the idea is to find a place perfectly reproducing the Eiffel Tower and have fun taking pictures by the imaginary cliff or jumping over the gaping chasm.
In Thailand, 3 sniffer dogs have joined the fight against the third wave of the pandemic in the country.
The canines sniff hundreds of sweat samples per day to detect COVID patients who display no symptoms. The samples are from local medical volunteers as well as bedridden patients who are not able to show up at testing centers. Thailand's Social Development and Human Security Ministry is in charge of collecting the samples and delivering them to a university in Bangkok where the dogs operate. Researchers say the dogs can detect a volatile compound secreted in the sweat of COVID-infected people.
The distinctive scent is what would appear after there's an infection. Different kinds of viruses will produce different kinds of scents, therefore they contain different smells. The canines are very sensitive towards scents excreted from human body, and they have better scents by hundreds of millions of times better than us humans, without even having to come into close contact with the virus.
Researchers say the dogs have a success rate of over 90% in detecting asymptomatic COVID patients. They say the canines have gone through thousands of samples since early May.
Robots probably will never replace humans, but you must be worried they might steal your job in the future. A cook robot in Spain has risen to fame because of its ability to prepare paella, one of the world's most renowned national dishes. This robot is made up of an electronically controlled stove and a mechanical arm. It can put the already fried ingredients into the pan, add rice to it, and then stir it before pouring in the fish stock. The robot can prepare one paella at a time. However, all the ingredients have to be prepared and measured in advance. The Spanish company behind this product is trying to expand the robot's functionality.
They are designing what we have named Gastro Robot Menu, a robot gastronomic experience. Five chefs from the Basque Culinary Center are developing a five-course menu, so eventually, we would take a seat in front of the robot and taste five courses designed by five important chefs.
Enrique says the product has already provoked interest outside Spain. He says some amusement parks and resorts in Japan already have their own paella robots. Paella masters believe the machine is a useful tool for chefs because they can cook many paellas at the same time. As the world continues to battle COVID-19, people are finding traditional and modern ways of remembering those who have lost their lives due to the pandemic. A public library in the U.S. is commemorating the victims with an origami project. The Greenpoint Public Library in Brooklyn, New York City, has collected 1,000 origami pieces since April. Inspired by the ancient Japanese legend that 1,000 paper cranes can bring well wishes or healing, the library aims to promote hope and a sense of solidarity. The delicate handmade cranes, many of them from recycled paper, are now on display in the library's lobby. The staff hopes that each and every crane brings hope to the community.
We made this for the COVID Remembrance Day event, month-long event. In many cultures, especially in Asian culture, it symbolizes peace, love, recovery, and hope. And especially in Japanese culture, Senbazuru, 1,000 paper crane, is really significant. They believe that if one holds 1,000 paper crane, one's wishes come true.
The library has also asked people to come by and drop off their homemade origami as a memorial to the COVID-19 victims. It plans to keep up the display until at least the end of the summer.
IRIB English Radio.